Drums, please. Hi, it's me, Ashkenazi, your favourite North London Jewish queen. I am here to bring to you the secrets from the Pink Room.
Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room. Pink Room, Pink Room, not the Stink Room. Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room.
Hello, my bubblers, it's me, Ashkenazi, reminding you to curb your enthusiasm. Welcome to the Pink Room, the queerest backstage since the finale of Seinfeld. This week in the Pink Room, I was joined by one of my favourite artists, Grove, whose queering of dancehall and non-binary representation is breaking new boundaries in the scene. The Grove Manifesto, as I've come to call it, is set out in their latest record, the Queer Plus Black EP. If there's one thing you do this year, it's go to a Grove gig. But first, I want to take you back to June 2021. Lockdown restrictions were easing and I had urgent business to attend to in Eastbourne. During the pandemic, my grandmother's seaside flat had been transformed into a weed farm. So Father Kanazi and I went down to investigate. Here's what transpired.
Okay, welcome to Nana's Weed Farm. Some lovely art on the wall. That's the front door. Some Pringles and popcorn. Anyway, so we got this lovely staircase. So these were where the baby ones were built, I assume.
So there's live pigeons right at the top?
Oh yeah, in the next
room. The nest is there, though.
There was about six or seven.
How many?
Whole, six or seven live ones up there. Mm.
Mm.
It smells up there as well.
Careful, Dad.
No pigeon shit. Oh, yeah. How'd they get in?
I think from up there.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Cat, you're standing on a dead pigeon, Dad.
Oh, God, so many of them. They're all over there now.
There are pigeons stuck in a weed farm. I'm here to help you.
Quick disclaimer, no pigeons were harmed in the recording process. The relevance of the pigeon weed farm will become clear, but for now, sit back and enjoy listening to this edition of The Pink Room with Grove. Grove.
Bitch.
Welcome.
Hello.
Festival season is over. Have you come back to reality?
Yes. No, I think I've got a really lovely crew of people around, like the people who I have been like touring around with, also the people who I chill with. And we've just been managing to do some lovely writing, catching up with all our mates and just loving the city that Bristol is.
London was a tougher concept post-festival. It's just living in a tent, taking mushrooms on the regular, and then I get back to London and I'm not living in a tent. I'm living with my mum. And I'm not taking mushrooms on the regular because mum would be very confused. So I'm finding post-festival season quite difficult. But I must say that your sets during festival season were some of my favourite. Which was your favourite festival to play?
Ooh, can I do top three?
Yeah, top three.
Top three. In no particular order. End of the Road was like really special and really significant. I think that Wall of Death to Sound of the Underground was the best thing I've ever seen in my life. Which, by the way, Sound of the Underground is coming out as a single in early November.
Girls Aloud cover.
And then we played this amazing festival called Blue Dot, which is like science and music combined. So you've got like loads of nerds who are also like hardcore ravers. And we'd have like really interesting chats with these lovely people afterwards who are like, ah, we're gonna make our kids listen to your music. You are the future of music. And I'm like, okay, you're literally astrophysicists and you're saying this. And don't know. And then there was this festival in Czech Republic called Fluff Fest, which is this like hardcore punk festival, like hardcore punk. And it's just like 1,000 like sweaty punks in a field. And we drove up and we're like, oh, this is literally 1,000 sweaty punks in a field with like a few stages, like very DIY, very definitely love a DIY ethos. And it was weird having like fully grown, like big blokey bearded men when I was like, okay, now you're going to bust a wine. And they were like,
it's internal, it's natural.
Totally.
One of the things is every time you get to the end of BBB, Big Bad Bitch, I can't help but vogue. I actually have to move. And then I get my little shout out, which I'm always very happy with. And your manager turns to me and is be like, bitch, I've been working this for like 3 years and I've never got a shout out. And you just do a few hand moves and Grove's there like shouting you out.
Oh, Anastasia. Yeah,
yeah. Oh. My heart goes out. There are times though when festivals do become tricky. And I want to talk about one moment which I witnessed at a festival where you were cut short for no reason. And as I was watching the drama unfold, it felt as though another band on a separate stage who was all white boys playing straight boy guitar indie were allowed to continue as normal. And I felt this sense of drama unfolding around the queerness and the blackness on stage. I wanted to hear your opinion on what happened in that moment and whether you think that that was the case and how we can contend with that as we move forward.
Mm. In the case of that particular festival, it was like terrible organization, like the whole thing, bad organization. And there was like even tension before we started playing, because we were originally meant to be playing a bigger stage and then they downsized us with no explanation like 2 days before. So already I was like, doesn't feel great. And then for like, yeah, that to happen. And on the day I was asking for an explanation, I was like, why has this been cut short? Like, this is all of this disorganization has nothing to do with me. Yeah, you know, I'm the one paying the price. And but the thing is, everyone had kind of clocked out, like everyone working on the stage had clocked out. And it was definitely in like a very powerless position. I think all I could do after that is bring it up to the organization in a, like a serious way. And just say that it's like not good enough. Like, take a look at what you're doing. Mm. Like, it's not good enough. It kind of gave like a half apology. And that's all that we could do right then. Then I sounded off on Twitter. I was like, yeah, like, fuck this festival. I'm never playing it again. No one should ever go there. No one should ever do it. It's so poorly organized. They treat people like shit. And I still stand by that. I'm not going to play it again unless they give me lots of money, and also make sure that that never happens to any other specially marginalized performers. It's, I just don't get how they can see that, significance of that.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
And moving from that slightly negative story, switching it to positive, the title of your latest EP is?
Spice. I've also got another EP called Queer and Black.
Okay, you're penultimate? Is that the right one? Yeah, one before the last.
Yeah. Oh, but I could see why you'd get confused, because we did a re-release of the EP, so it comes up as the latest release.
Yeah, Spotify is lying to me.
Exactly. But Queer and Black is an EP that like did a lot for Grove as like an artist and a being. And it's definitely an EP that's not like, it's not like saying like, this is what being queer and black is like. It's just like, oh, this is my experience of queerness and blackness. And it's particularly important, like the plus sign in the middle, meaning that you're both at the same time, because there's a person maybe a few years ago who I like respect quite highly within music, who was like, you can be black, you can be gay, but you've got to choose what you are first. Like, and that just kind of like underpins like homophobia within the kind of like community as a whole, but like, especially within the black community, it could like cut a bit deep. But yeah, that was a wicked EP full of lots of angst and different forms of expression.
It feels to me like the Grove manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
What you want the world to look like, which I think for an artist is an incredible statement. And I wanted to speak about one particular statement. Fuck your landlord.
Is this in the shop?
It is. Off of their heads.
Off of their heads. Look at this. Look at this landlord looking ass.
This landlord.
Yeah.
It's
a warning.
Weirdly erect nipples, though.
Yeah. Well, wow.
Well, I don't know.
I'm really red.
Yeah. So, is there a particular story that you want to share about a particular landlord?
But our landlord, upon first moving in, to Bristol, was just like useless. There was like slugs all over the floor all the time. And we were like, hey, we think we've got a problem with mold. There's slugs in the kitchen. I'm going for a midnight snack and I'm stepping on slugs. Can you please like fix this? Can you please like fix this problem with like mold and damp that we've got? Because I'm not sure if you've ever stepped on a slug before, Ash.
I stepped on a snail many times and I hear, you know, you get that crunch and I get
with
really...
With bare feet?
Yeah.
Oh, you got crunchy foot snail. Ooh.
It's the crunch, then the squish.
Yeah.
It's quite incredible, actually. It almost like, it's like stepping into like cornflakes over a chocolate mousse.
That's then really hard to get off your feet.
Yeah. Oh, God, that reminds me. Chocolate in between the toes is really hard to get out. Cum in between the toes is the hardest.
Oh, wow.
So the foot fetish is hard to clean. Not that I've got a foot fetish, but I have met a couple of men with the foot fetish and my God.
My gosh.
Yeah. Sorry, just when you wiped your feet, I just got reminded of that. And always wear socks in the club, basically. So.
What about your landlord?
Oh, God. I mean, I was living in Broccoli during the pandemic. And our landlord is a perfectly nice man, but you could tell he lived in West London, had his family, and had all these other properties. And he didn't care what state it was in until I did something to disrupt his life. So I was just, you know, on my ones in the flat, having a gay old time with this super large dildo that I had bought as a lockdown present to myself.
Uh-huh.
And I did the deed, felt really good about myself. And I was like, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to wash this really well now. So I went to the sink and I turned on the hot water, put the dildo in the sink, and then went back to my room. An hour later, my flatmate comes home and she's screaming. She's like, Ash, there's hot water all over the floor. I ran out my room and the dildo had got stuck in the plug hole.
Mm-hmm.
And the water was overflowing like madness. It was the most expensive dildo of my entire life because it cost me price of dildo plus shipping, and it was Brexit time. So yeah. We'd already like 20 quid for shipping plus my deposit. But the thing that got to me about my landlord was not like, you know, people make mistakes. You got to contend with that if you own a property and you're going to let people live in it, people are going to fuck shit up, mm-hmm. right? It was the way he said to me, well, you didn't have to leave the hot tap on. And I was like, do you know what? At this point, mate, I'm going to go live with my mum because I can take that from her, but I can't take that from some, like, randomer who's letting me live in his house. Anyway, so there's my landlord story.
Dickhead.
Yeah. I'm afraid, though, I've got a little secret that I'm sat on.
Okay.
I inadvertently became a landlord.
Of one property.
So.
Oh, how many?
In the pandemic, my grandma got full-on dementia. And I got a call from the police one day. And it was like, is this Sheila Cooper's grandson? And I was like, yes. And the policeman was like, oh, I'm afraid you're going to have to come down to Eastbourne. Your grandma's flat has been overtaken by a weed dealer. And it become like a full-on...
Operation.
And I went down and literally I'm sitting on a weed farm without any plants. They took the plants.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do.
So you've just got loads of like hydroponic lights.
Lots of plant pots, lots of soil. of all plant pots of all different sizes and thousands of pigeons, because they opened up the roof, all the pigeons came in.
And they won't fucking leave.
They won't leave. It's like it's a death trap.
What?
Yeah, I know, it's madness. And I was like, Nana, like, your Eastbourne property is being cottaged. And she was like, what? She doesn't know. So what would be your advice to me now that I inadvertently have this weed farm? But often you talk about ways that you can rethink the way that the property market works. And mm-hmm. I wanted you to give me some advice
on what
I can do to bring, I've got to bring it to life, but, you know, to make it an equitable and fair situation for everyone.
Mm. I guess it's because the property that you've got is already like fully paid for and there's no like mortgage on it, I assume. So all I'm going to do, I don't know particularly yet how to apply it to this, but what some people do who like rent out things that they've inherited is either A, just charging like a really low rate, not like a competing market price, but just like a low rate where like any potential damages and maintenance is covered. Or if you have got it on a mortgage, you offer a percentage of that mortgage to the people who are paying that mortgage, which is like the tenants at the time. And then they can choose at the end of their tenancy whether they want to like sell their share to someone or whether to keep it or something like that. There is a really, like, people who understand and communicate this thing really comprehensively online, but essentially there is just like options instead of it just being like, oh, this passive income thing where, you know, can only apply to like people who make like a certain amount of money. There is ways. I'll have to send you through some resources of people who are knowledgeable on this thing.
And there's a particular website that you often share in your shows.
Oh, I quite often share the Housing Union Acorn, but I know that London Renters Union is also really good. Might be like worth getting in contact with them, to be fair, because I'm sure they would have like a really comprehensive knowledge on like, well, they do just have a comprehensive knowledge on what's fair for tenants. And if you, as like a person who is a landlord, wants to work with people who are tenants, that's just like the absolute best thing you could do.
Because some of those seaside towns, they're really struggling now because people can go in, buy property real cheap and push out people that live there. So I'm quite keen to use it to do good.
Totally.
I don't know what that is yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, trying to clear out a weed farm is with loads of pigeons is a bizarre process.
Yeah. Like have you like physically been in there a few times?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you just like stand and look? Do you like move any pots anywhere? You're like, oh, this pot be nice.
I don't want to touch
it. Like, shoo a pigeon.
I feel like I need a hazmat suit because
pigeon shit.
Yeah, and dead pigeons, lots of dead ones too. So standing on crunchy bones and all sorts of things, and it's very strange. It's frustrating because I have to do something about it.
Yeah.
I guess it's also a good thing. Project for the future.
Totally, totally. And the fact that you're just open to like wanting to do the good thing and learning about whatever the good thing might be is respect.
These are the things that Grove teaches me on the regular. Another thing that Grove has taught me is the legend that is Spice.
Spice.
Let's talk about
our
Spice.
Our queen and savior Spice, so Jamaican dancehall artist extraordinaire.
We called this years before, maybe a year before the moment.
Yeah.
Spice is now a queer icon, but
yeah.
It was a particular video you posted where she gives Kardashian tea in a way that only a dancehall act could.
This was back in like 2017, this like live show. Everything's going nuts in this live show. She's bringing beds on stage. There's like women bringing men on stage, like wildly, wildly daggering. That's it, like daggering, where it's just like boom, boom, boom. And then she just stops for a minute. Black China was tiger, pom pom. Kylie Jenner use Fia, pom pom. Take with tiger from China, pom pom. So China just give Kylie bread a pom. in the dance hall, killa get the most pom pom, me got a classy pom pom, me pop me pom pom, etc.
I have studied this.
Yeah.
Time after time. And I think that was, correct me if I'm wrong, it was an on the moment thing. Because right before she says that, she manages to put her mic too close to one of the monitors and it goes, and she stands there and she's like, the way she strokes just the like thin slice of hair. She stands there and she goes, I'm going to have to fix this, and gives our Kardashian tea. And it's just an incredible moment. My other favorite one is, well, it's this event called Reggae Swim Fest every year. And in 2018, she comes out on stage dressed in full Wakanda Black Panther look. And there are these two huge men.
I think I know what you're about to say. Behind her,
dressed as like Black Panthers. And they're daggering.
Daggering, whining, the works.
The works, the full works. And she stops the music. She has a habit of stopping the music. And she goes, Black Panther too militant for me.
And Ash, in this same show, where she go like, again, stops the music.
Yeah.
And she's like, no offense, but I'm strictly dickly.
Like,
strictly dickly.
Yeah. I've taken that, and I am also strictly dickly. Which brings me nicely onto your boyfriend's whack.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where did this come from, this idea? Was there a particular boyfriend or a collection of boyfriends? Because I do agree that most boyfriends are whack.
Yeah. The tune itself actually started off as like all the rest of the lyrics of the tune, aside from never done this before because your boyfriend's whack, all the rest of the lyrics of the tune is about like deep shame about being gay. But then I was like, wait, why am I shame?
Mm, yeah.
Like, what am I shame?
What a shame.
Yeah, I think it was just like a series of people who I'd either been seeing or like some of my friends. I'm like, gosh, if you were just queer, like your life would be so much easier for yourself. And then I was just like, huh, I'm gonna be cheeky about it.
There is something about queerness that brings a certain level of fun to the plate. And it's when you can get past the shame, that's when your life kind of reopens.
Totally. Was there like a point for you at which there either was shame that you got through? There was like a level of shame in you, like, whoom.
I think drag, when I found drag, that's when the shame went. Because I recognized the beauty of my story and how I could show that in drag form. So a lot of drag for me is about, you know, repackaging up that shame and representing it in a way that feels comfortable to me. Is that experience something that happens with blackness as well?
With my blackness, it's been a bit of a weird... Yeah, I guess there's like definitely similarities there because I grew up in Cheltenham, white town, very like middle to upper class, where it was in a school of like 1,000 people with like 3 or 4 brown and black people there. Like it was, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was just like a very suppressive experience where like, it was just like assimilation. Like I'd laugh all these jokes where people would just be like making fun of my race. And like, it was as soon as I hit like 18, I was like, what have I been doing? Like, what have I been doing? And it was after reading like about the breadth of the history of like Black Britain, of like civil rights movement in the US, about like the rich history of Africa, that I was like, yeah, just like found sources of deep anger in the injustices, but then also like deep beauty and pride at people thriving through such like tough times. And yeah, I guess through that experience, it's then telling the story of like my blackness and my experience with like being dual heritage in a way that feels comfortable, especially doing it through the medium of dancehall music, which is notoriously, well, a lot of the well-known songs are just very homophobic, but they kind of get away with it because they're like, woo, like they're, yeah, big jams. Mm. So I think, yeah, queering dancehall is like the thing I want to do.
It's a beautiful movement. And I've been watching my brother as well do a similar thing in drum and bass.
Just absolutely.
Bring some queerness with unorthodox. And
the Nathan.
Yeah, the Nathan X.
The Nathan X.
Just feel so proud of him to watch him, you know, achieve his goals and, you know, take something that he loved so much as, you know, a teenager, but found really difficult to be a part of because he was queer.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying watching that process.
It's beautiful. Because your brother's been... Do you like the main stage of Boomtown? Oh! It looked incredible.
It did look incredible. I was sad not to go with. But just bringing that full array of representation to that space like Boomtown. So... artists that I think you'll know, like Maddie Dexterous, mm-hmm. MC Chickaboo.
Don't know that.
You'd love MC Chickaboo. Imanu, it's another drum and bass DJ. Yeah, it's just beautiful to watch. And I think there's, you know, going back to initially what you were saying about how you were performing at festivals to so many different crowds, it really, there's something about the queering of it that enables it to be shared more,
mm-hmm.
which is such a, it seems so wrong in terms of, you know, when you think about what, how many people are queer compared to the rest of the straight population, you always consider that there'd be a much smaller crowd. But I'm just seeing that when the queerness is enveloped and like meshed in, it opens up the space so much more.
Mm. I think, because I think growing up, what we were told is that like 10% of people are queer. The real number is way higher than that.
Oh yeah, that is also true.
The real number is way higher than that. And I think that's what I'm hoping that people are like realizing that as the years go on and as people are like seeing queerness embraced, it means that they can embrace their own queerness. Like whether or not that's just like a tiny slice of you or like a much bigger part of you you've been suppressing, like, yeah.
No, that's absolutely true.
Hey, everybody, I'm Dave Holmes.
And I'm Matt McConkie.
And we are the hosts of Homophilia, the podcast where we talk to awesome LGBTQ+ people about the pop culture that they are consuming and loving and the love lives that they are leading. The conversations that we wish we had had access to when we were growing up. The conversations that we would like to eavesdrop on now. But we have them with the coolest people in the world. Like who, Matt?
Sir Andy Cohen himself.
What?
Michael Patrick King, Tig Notaro, Alan Cumming, Jinx Monsoon, and Vendela Creme. Countless queens from the Drag Race universe. We're asking all of them about the pop culture milestones that shaped them as queer people. And more importantly, who they're having sex with.
There you go. It's the queer conversation they don't want you to have. We're having it on Homophilia every week on the World of Wonder Network. Tune in.
Listen to Homophilia on the WOW Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts.
In a world full of straight people, aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
Talking of queerness, let's talk about Sticky. Part of the manifesto.
Tight up skirt. Drink a little brandy. Yellow so sweet, sticky, sticky like candy. This was a big, big rave dancehall manifesto tune moment thing. Drum and bass,
yeah.
Jungle. Ugh. Like, yeah, so happy with this tune. It's just about loving the girldom.
Yeah.
And I wrote this one after going to Pussy Palace in London, which is like an event for like all femme people of color. And the first time I went to one of these was when I was 19. And this was a year. No, I hadn't even moved out of Cheltenham yet. So imagine me living in Cheltenham. In and of itself.
I was at Oxford Uni and it's not a million miles away from Cheltenham, right? Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So the most amount of like brown people I've been in a room with was like, not including my family, was probably like three. Maybe like three of us in a room. We'd be like... This party, there was thousands of queer people of colour all in one space. And my heart, my little heart was just full. And the music that was playing there was like amazing UK funky, which at this point I'd never listened to before. And I was like, and like dance hall and like all of this stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh. And the lyrics for Sticky were written days after that experience. Cause I was like, this is it. This is like it. And being able to rave in spaces like this and to feel the want to make music that reflects that. Yeah, it's wicked.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
And talk to me about what's next. So the festival season is done. The Spice EP is out. The Queer and Black Manifesto is out.
Uh-huh.
What's the next step?
Well, next, non...
Or is it a big secret?
Oh, no, it's not a secret. Next, like, non-music-related wise, I'm going to Australia for a few months to go see my brothers and my little nieces for nearly 2 months.
So is the rest of your family in Australia?
Just my two brothers. And then my parents are in Gloucestershire. My sister's in Gloucestershire, but just my two brothers and my two nieces who I adore with all of my heart, and I've met them twice now. But yeah, I'm excited to spend like a big chunk of time with them. Yeah, they're just beautiful, beautiful little beans.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I do think about having a child quite a lot.
Mm.
Maybe because, you know, society says that, it is changing, but you know, at the face of it, it's like, well, you can't have a child in the legitimate way that we think of having children. So one of my favorite things is playing festivals and there are hundreds of kids in the audience and it's just such a beautiful moment.
Yeah. And I think it's like with, I guess, kind of on the same subject of like, because obviously with me and my partner as well, but it's the whole thing in the queer community of
beautiful Ella.
Beautiful Ella, EJ. Stunning soul, gorgeous human, base demon.
Every time you make, oh, well, no, I'm going to give away the joke now.
Oh, no, it's fine.
But every time you're like, oh, EJ's parents are here, I'm like, where?
They have been there a few times.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Which one time I forgot to like be like, oh, they actually are.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, the parents are here. And they were like, oh. And I was like, there and there. And they were like,
oh. These two subs.
Yeah. But what was I saying? About like having children as queer people, and a lot of people who I speak to in the queer community want to view it as more of like that it takes a village to raise a child, and like I guess like legitimacy is always a thing as well. I don't know. I think when the time is right for myself, probably will adopt a lovely bean, raised with like a lovely group of friends. Yeah, that's just what I've been thinking.
Yeah, I'm big on that at the moment. I do have a hilarious story from Deer Shed Festival. Were you at that one?
No.
So I had been asked to run a agony aunt session in drag. And Deer Shed is a full family festival, like family focused. And for this agony aunt session, I kind of expected the adults to kind of come up with, you know, witty questions about, you know, why my husband won't give me good head or something like that. But instead 100 kids lined up to ask questions that obviously their parents didn't have the answers to.
Yeah.
So it started really simple. It started with kids coming up and saying, oh, why does my dad snore? Or, you know, why does my mum drink tea? And then they kind of, as each kid got on and off the stage, they grew in confidence and kind of had this hive mind. And then things started getting weird because they obviously saw me as some sort of sage. I don't know why, you know, just this ridiculous drag queen who just sung opera. And questions started going like, why does my dad drink and then shout at me? And then this little girl trundles up to the stage and she's like, hi. And I'm like, hi, what's your question for Ashkenazi? And she goes, why will my mommy and daddy not get back together? And I was just, my heart was just literally dropped out of my stomach. It was, I don't know what was happening. And I basically like sat her down and was like, well, my parents separated and, you know, now I'm much happier for it, but you know, you're going to have a tough few years and et cetera. And she still, and she just stared up at me continually throughout the whole thing. And I was like, are you okay? She's like, yeah. And then trundled back off again.
Wow.
But it was mad.
So were these like, you didn't have like a microphone and was saying arts? Is that
no,
right?
No, we just... did have a microphone. So all the parents in the audience were like, oh.
Well done to you for like treating it with the respect that it deserves, because like this kid needs an answer to this from an external source.
It like, I was like glued to my seat. Yeah. Like, oh my God, how do I deal with this situation? And I was like, this is above my pay grade. I'm like, I'm in a DIY agony aunt. What therapy?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really hard. I don't know how I got onto that. Kids.
Call Childline.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was, after that, the little girl that asked me that, I was like, right, we're going to do some opera now. And then I had 100 kids chasing me around a field while I was trying to sing Casta Diva. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I could see why you found it hard to land back again.
These
are surreal.
Yeah.
Big experiences.
Yeah, they are. And it's crazy that something like drag can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever find that your statements in your outwardness, in your, you know, putting everything on the table, do you get strange responses? I can think of one.
End of the road.
Yeah.
Landlord gate.
Yeah, landlord gate.
Yeah. That is a deep, I guess that's not even like a strange response. That's like, I actually kind of like hope for those responses. So that instead of it being this like silent divide and everyone like doesn't really speak about it and this is just how it is, you can kind of like break that wall and actually have a discourse. And I guess people who are like aloof in their views and they just view the world a certain way and just live, you know, they're just living their life in their bubble. For them to have that challenged is like an important thing, to have like conversations about it. And even if this man was saying like, tell the story for some context, but like at end of the road, did the tune Fuck Your Landlord, and there's this group chat in for the festival where someone posted Grove saying Fuck Your Landlord, oh, hate that energy, nasty. And then people started responding being like, what are you on about? Like, we agree with that. And then the dude was like, oh no, but you don't have to say it like that. Which is like a typical thing of people like trying to control how you express things because it hurts their feelings. And then people started piping up in this group chat, making jokes, being like, please everyone pray for the most oppressed group of people in this society. Property owners, like pray for them, thoughts and prayers. And then the person ended up being like, oh, well, you know, like, let's meet outside the cider bus for a friendly chat. And I genuinely hope that someone did.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whether or not it was friendly debate, like, I hope that there was, like, a speaking forum. Because it's so, like, in-person debating or, like, speaking forums are so what is needed right now in this, like, constantly divisive online sphere. And, like, if people were to, like, have it out in person and exchange, perhaps more of like a human understanding of each other could occur. Because that's what we're lacking right now. We're just being fed algorithmically what we're going to like. Everyone is. And it's not a sustainable thing. It's not a sustainable thing. So basically what I want to see is like, have you played Assassin's Creed?
I mean, I couldn't get past the first level. I'm a terrible gamer.
Okay, like, that's fair enough.
I'm not a good gamer. It doesn't work in my brain.
Yeah.
I think I'm something in my, like, distinct like neurosis Jewish kind of energy is like, this assassin, you know, why is he not depressed about, you know, that his sandwich was cold, you know? You know, he can wield a knife, but, you know, can he say the bracha over the candles on a Friday night? You know, and I'm sure, like, I have too many questions.
Okay.
Gaming gives me too many questions.
Totally.
So I'm not a gamer, sadly, because I do think that if I was a good gamer, I see games and I see the realities that they create and the spaces that they create for people. Like, I had a very interesting conversation with a disabled person who used Sims as a way to explore a world where their disability didn't exist.
Mm.
And that was very interesting to me, that you could use games in that context.
Yeah.
But yes, Assassin's Creed.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Sorry, just to like stay on that.
Yeah.
I feel The Sims is like, I don't know, I think it's like an important part of like cultural history growing up.
So
I explore my queerness through The Sims.
Right, right. Yeah. I used to get the guys to like make out in the jacuzzi.
Yeah.
That's actually really, well, I was good at The Sims because the neuroses are irrelevant and, you know, you can fill the bars out or defill them. But the thing that freaks me out about The Sims now, there was like a separation between my reality and The Sims because the roads didn't, you know, growing up in London, the roads didn't look that straight and the houses weren't that big and people didn't operate on this kind of like, I can choose to be your friend or not be your friend kind of way of working. But when I went to America and taught America, I was like, oh my fuck me, this is The Sims. Literally, like,
straight roads,
yeah
big houses,
yeah. And literally, like, I can find out more in 5 minutes about someone in like Phoenix, Arizona than I can some of my friends that I've known for 15 years. Genuinely.
Wow.
Yeah, because people lay it on the table, which also has it brings its own problems with it. But people are just like, here's my life, this is what I do. And I've learned a lot from that, but it is terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I've never been to the country.
You're gonna love. Get ready for like the bizarrest times of your life.
Okay. Say no more.
But Assassin's Creed.
So in Assassin's Creed, go back to the subject of like speakers on the street. Obviously, this doesn't stem from Assassin's Creed itself, but it stems from society back in like perhaps older times, where if people had grievances about the system they were living in, they'd go on the street and just like shout about it. Unfortunately, the only people in the UK who shout about things is like the weird Christians.
Mm.
So, like, usually if I hear someone shouting, I'm like, ugh.
Bristol particularly has that.
It's got...
What? Why is that? What's going on in Bristol?
I have no idea. And I don't want to know. But yeah, what fair. I do want is people just, like, people think, like, oh, I've got to be, like, a leader or something in order to speak to people. But I've had conversations with people who speak as, like, passionately, eloquently, who are just, like, Karen from down the road.
Mm.
And if those people were like emboldened to share what they're saying and see that so many people agree with them, I'm just wondering in like the testing times we're living in now, if that would make like a big difference. But that's just been a little brain thought recently. Well,
this is why I enjoy doing these podcasts, because already, even today, so I have this barrier to this supposed legitimacy around my child. And now I'm there thinking, oh, actually, you know, like, it do take a village and I can be involved in some other childcare situation that isn't so legitimate. Like, it's just bringing these things out through conversation is far more interesting than the way that some of these conversations go on social media, where it's opinions thrown out without someone being able to respond in a way that isn't an antithesis to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you could explore it beyond like an infographic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we've got like this amount of space for information. Yeah. And you can swipe 9 times, not more. And that's the information you're getting. Yeah, I think obviously infographic culture is like good for like understanding little bits of things, but humans want like, that's like the bones. That's like the bare bones. And we want the meat. Yeah, how are we going to get that meat? Through having in-person conversations like this.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I think that's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Ash, thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much.
Where did you get this bodice? Who?
I'll show you the designer afterwards because I think EJ would look...
Trust me.
Would look particularly strong in these outfits.
Hell yes.
And they're doing sample sales at the moment. But yeah, no, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak to you. Always a pleasure to see you. I love being able to talk with other creatives and make connections and set the world on fire.
Set these titties on fire.
Yeah.
No, the feeling's fully mutual, Ash. And
amazing.
Let's get this bread.
Yeah, yeah. Feed my desire, baby.
Let's get this bread. Let's get them pigeons out of your house.
And then we can get to work.
And come out of your toes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pigeons out, come out toes.
Boom.
Done.
That's what we've learned.
Fabulous.
It's now Jan 2023. I can safely say my feet are clean. But there are still pigeons stuck on Nana's weed farm. Thanks to Grove for spending time with me in the Pink Room, and here's another reminder to go see them live. The Pink Room is a World of Wonder production, produced by Michael Pressman and Chris Kearns, and edited by Jesse Caron. Thanks to Pip Rousson, Tati Pozuela, and Nina Madley, who engineered the podcast. I'm Ashkenazi. If you enjoyed The Pink Room, please subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends. And remember, Queens, what happens on tour definitely gets shared in The Pink Room. Ta-ra for now!